Hello, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, and I would like to welcome you to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box of convention. And we're going to do that today, as I always do when I come to you every other Saturday at 11 a.m. on bbsradio.com. Before I get rolling with my very interesting guest, I'm going to love talking to her. I just want to apologize. Many of you are asking, whatever happened to Patricia Corey? And I've been off the radar, as many of you are aware, for one main reason. I've been working on my novel, which is the first novel I've ever done, feverishly. I have not been traveling, which is a first. And I've been working 10, 12, 16 hours a day bringing forward this story. And I'm thrilled to tell you that it's been completed in 2.5 months. Oh, my God. So I'm back in circulation. I thank you for your patience. But it's a very, very exciting project. I can't wait until it comes out and I can share it with you. It's called The Emissary. I think I'm the only person that wrote the screenplay first and then wrote the novel. But hopefully you'll be seeing both the movie and definitely the novel first. And with a little bit of miracle dust, we'll get the movie working too. So that's something to look forward to. And I am back and ready to roll. And with that, I am quite delighted to talk to you today about this exciting story that's come across my path. The author is Annie Kagan. And the book is called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I love the title, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death, a subject that, of course, I hold very near to my heart since I have been back and forth on both sides, and I love when anybody can bring more wisdom out about that experience to help us all understand that we are infinite beings, immortal souls, and whenever life gets you too crunched and frightened, you just remember that this little earth passage here is a little tunnel we're going through, and it can be a little dense as most of us are experiencing it, but it's just a passage, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Annie Kagan does not declare herself to be a medium or a psychic. She hasn't had a near-death experience, as I understand it, but she was awakened by her brother passed over, and of course, that experience, when you first start connecting with someone, can be a little testy, like you think you're going out of your mind. But in the book, Life of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death, she's sharing the story of the communication she's had with her brother Billy, who began speaking to her just weeks after his unexpected passing. So we're going to delve into that today with her. And I just want to, before she comes on, I want to say that this is an interesting woman. She's a musician. She was a chiropractor. She's just a personality. And with that, I welcome you. Hi, Annie.
Oh, hi, Patricia. That was a beautiful introduction. And I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have you. I know we're going to have so much fun.
We are going to have fun.
Well, we have a lot of people that are very excited, and actually my audience, I'm certain, is quite comfortable with the subject of life after death and the experience of soul consciousness coming through. So we're not going to have to convince anyone that's listening, and we can move forward toward the deeper aspects of your experience. So for starters, let's talk about, obviously, what got you writing the book was because he contacted you. Give us a little background on how this all occurred.
Yes. About 3 weeks after my brother died, I was asleep. Actually, it was dawn, and I was kind of waking up, and I was pretty grief-stricken, missing him, feeling sad, and all of a sudden, I heard his voice talking to me through the ceiling, as if there was a hole in the ceiling, calling my name. Annie, Annie, it's me, it's Billy, get up, I'm okay, get up. And he described floating through a divine, blissful universe with the light around him of caring and understanding and compassion and love. And that atmosphere flowed into me, and all my grief melted away, and I felt very, very euphoric at that moment.
Oh, man. I lost my mom 10 years ago. It's just been an anniversary of 10 years, and I had a similar experience, but it took a while for her to come. And I was like, how can this be? I have quite a powerful psychic capacity, and why aren't you coming through to me? And of course, I couldn't get through my own grief to reach her. So you were blessed that he was able to come for you and help you cope with that grief.
Yes, and it really is a very strong antidote to grief. Because even though they communicate with us, people should know you still feel grief. It wasn't like my grief went away and then didn't come back again. But the edge was taken off of the grief, because it was very important to know that he was okay.
Yes.
We grieve on this side. They don't really grieve on the other side. And I think they come to let us know they're okay, and please be okay. They want us to be okay, right? Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, I think that, in my mother's case, she said, I can't move forward until I know you can let go, and until I'm in your grief. So until you can let go, I'll be here. But please, you're the one. You're the one who always told me. And now you're not walking your dog. Come on. Let me free. Set me free.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I believe there is some sort of, well, you can tell us, did he feel in any way that until you could let go of that suffering, he was in, let's say, hindered from taking the leaps he needed to take?
Yeah, actually, I don't think that that's true. And possibly your mom said it that way to assist you in letting go of the grief. But mm-hmm. from what I understand from Billy, they're free on the other side. And actually, they're able to put like a little hologram of themselves near you to kind of be like a guardian spirit, but they're able to be in more than one place at a time. So mm-hmm. it's funny, because a friend of mine said, you know, after I've had my experience with Billy, she started to talk to her father, and then she said, oh, I feel really guilty, like I'm preventing him from moving on. But it's not like that, because you're able to be in more than one place at a time on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that we really hold them back. But maybe they just say that to coax us into letting go of our grief?
Very possibly, because it was the ultimate thing that helped me get out of my grief. It was like, no, I am not going to hold on to this if it means even for a second taking any... That selfish need, mm-hmm. holding her in any way, any cord, that can't be. I have to let that go. So you're very well right. That may very well have been a way for me to snap out of my own grief.
Yeah, because she knows you so well, right?
Well, this was the ultimate relationship in my life.
Uh-huh.
And it was grief like I never thought I would ever know anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Patricia, because I think people believe that, oh, if they're visited or if they know that their loved ones go on, that means they have to instantly get over their grief. But at the same time, that person still isn't here. We can't hug them.
That's
Yeah, we can't be with them. I wish there could be a once a year they come back and they're in the flesh and we could hug them and talk to them and be with them, but it's not like that. So I think one of the really important things Billy taught me was to be natural, okay? So it's okay to grieve, but if there's something that could be done to just take the edge off of that feeling, because it's such a... As you are expressing, you're a very evolved person, and yet the grief had you in its grip. So it's okay to grieve.
I don't think that anything can prepare you. No spiritual, I may be wrong on this, but no spiritual experience, no education, no training can prepare you for the overwhelming grief of losing someone that you love so, so much. It's just like you. It's not anything that you can prepare for. It's when it happens to you, you need to walk through the grief. You need to let that out so that it doesn't metastasize as cancer inside of you or worse. And that's.
I agree that it's important to go through it, but I also believe, and I've been told by people who read the book, that it helps a lot. On Facebook now, there's a huge community, and everybody's leaving these wonderful comments, and I'm so thrilled about it. And there was this one woman, it was the anniversary of her lover's death, and she wrote to me saying, you know, she wanted to take her own life because she was so unhappy. And then she told me that he would give her a sign of number 44. For some reason, that was his sign from the afterlife. And after we were communicating a little bit, she said that the lights flickered in her house, and it was exactly 444. And it made her feel so much better. It's not like she completely healed, but knowing that that person is really fine, more than fine, and that you really, really will meet them again, that it's not just a fairy tale we're told. I think that that's a very good healing antidote.
I agree. I have an experience that not unlike that. When I was going through this horrific pain, and I said, Mom, please give me a sign. I'm going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Something. And my mother used to collect angels. She was an angel freak. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On my bookshelf near my desk, there was a birthday card that she had given me because we live far apart. And it said, you don't have to be near someone to touch them. Happy birthday, honey.
Mm-hmm.
This card, you don't have to be near someone to touch. It was on the words that I said. The card fell over. There wasn't a window open. It fell onto a little box of confetti, little silver angels that I had sitting next to her picture.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
The little box of angels fell over my head. And that was the beginning of the real healing. I cracked up. I mean,
yes.
I actually felt chills. It was so absolutely, unquestionably her. And my first reaction was that psychic chill. And then I started cracking up because it was so much a thing that she would do. And
yeah,
so,
that's the thing. The signs are very much in their nature. And
yes,
I think it's really important to open your mind. In other words, like you knew at that moment that it was your mother. You knew in every cell of your body. But then sometimes what happens is our mind kicks in, right? Because we know with something that's much bigger than our mind. That's what Billy also says, is that, you know, we understand that we're eternal beings, but not with our little mind, right?
Yes.
The little mind doubts. So, you know, your little mind might kick in and say, oh, how could that possibly be a sign from my mother? It's ridiculous. You know, did my mother do that? But it's really important to open your mind and open yourself to the healing that comes when you
Indeed.
Get that kind of a sign.
And
it had
what
to
was
be your mother.
You?
Yeah.
What was it for you? You said that you had that sign without a doubt that it was your mother. And what was it for you that was what you call the proof that it was Billy?
Yeah. Well, because Billy was writing a book, it was very important to me that he proved to me he was real. And I'm very scientific-minded. So it would have been one thing if he had a conversation with me. But for me to make this conversation public, I had to be pretty sure that it wasn't just my imagination, right? Because that's what we all think. Oh, somehow my grief is making me imagine this. Mm-hmm. And over again, Billy proved to me he was real in ways I couldn't ignore. So shall I tell you the first one?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so I only told a couple of people that Billy was speaking to me, and one of them was my girlfriend, Tex. And I was making lunch, and as I was making lunch, I heard him talking to me through the ceiling, and he says, call your friend Tex and tell her, show me the money. What an odd thing to say. So I call Tex. I said, oh, I know they're going to sound really crazy, but Billy just said to tell you, show me the money. What does that mean? And she gasped and started laughing, and she told me that that morning she had been walking by the beach with her dogs, and she looked up at the sky, and she said, Billy, if you're real, give me a sign, because I had shared some of his conversations with her. And then she came home, went in the shower, and when she got out of the shower, she was thinking of her screenplay, and she was dancing in front of the mirror with a towel, saying over and over again, show me the money, show me the money, show me the money. Wow. And then 10 minutes later, I call her and say, Billy said, show me the money. So it was like, I couldn't have seen her do that.
That's wonderful. Give us another one. I love
okay.
that.
Okay, okay. Here's a cute one. There are more serious ones. There's actually one where he helped save somebody's life.
Tell us.
Which is just an astounding long story that's in the book. But okay, here's a really cute one. So I'm driving into New York City, and I want to get my hair colored, and I'm thinking, well, should I make my hair darker or should I put streaks in it? So after I park my car and I'm walking to the salon, Billy says to me, why don't you make your hair the color of Lena Olin, the actress? And I'm said to him, what do you know about hair color, Billy? So I get to the salon, I sit down, and I feel this strange pull towards the woman who just sat down next to me, and it was Lena Olin.
Oh, my goodness. Did you tell her?
No. I'm speechless when these things happen. It's a very odd experience to have. It's almost as if my entire nervous system is being cleared. Because
plus,
I'm sitting there going, no.
Plus, you can't quite talk to a stranger, much less a celebrity, and say, guess what?
My brother just told me, you know, that I should have, you know, my dead brother. No, no less. So, you know, but those things happen.
And have her moving away from the seat next to you.
Right, right. That's true.
Let me ask you this. Does he appear to you also visually, or do you only hear? Not only, because I think that clairaudience is in many ways a more powerful experience than clairvisual.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Does he appear to you physically as well?
At first, I only heard him. But so the book covers a period of something like 2.5 years, although I'm still in contact with him. As he moves deeper into the afterlife, the way that he speaks to me or appears to me changes. So at first I heard him outside my head very clearly. Then it changed to like a blue light that would appear in my room, and I had to focus on the light in order to hear him, like a radio frequency to turn on. And then later on, he appeared to me. I could see him. I could see where he was. And it always changes according to what he's doing at that moment and where he is.
Have you ever had the experience of having him in your face so close?
Never.
That it's like a close-up that's just an inch away from your face?
No, I've never, never had that experience at all. Never.
That's kind of unusual. No. All right, so for the people who are just coming in late, I would like to just reintroduce. I'm speaking with Annie Kagan. Her book is The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother, she's going to tell us why she calls him a bad boy, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. And we're talking now about the experience of him coming through to her. I would like to go to the question of what other things, besides giving you information about reassuring you that he's there, I'm certain that he's giving you a lot of important information about life after death and perceptions of that experience. Can you give us some of the insights that are in the book that talk about what one experiences outside of the physical realm?
Yes. I think the most surprising and fascinating thing to me was what an active life he has on the other side. I think not that I ever had a strong concept of what happened, but I'm surprised at how much he changes and transforms on the other side, more so than on Earth. There are more changes that we go through on the other side than we do here.
And what kind of change?
Okay, so what you do on the other side is you're going towards the light, you're getting closer and closer to the source, and in that process, you're incorporating divine qualities that you come in contact with into yourself. So you're constantly becoming more loving, more compassionate, especially toward yourself. And what I love is that, you know, he meets higher beings along the way, and they give him unconditional love. And Billy's very funny. The book is very funny. He was funny when he was alive, and he's even funnier now. And he says that, you know, we talk about unconditional love on Earth, but we're really not able to, in human form, give anybody unconditional love. And that the power of true unconditional love is beyond anything we can imagine. And as he receives this unconditional love, which means that everything about him is extraordinary, right? It's not like acceptance where, okay, you have this flaw and I love you, so I accept it. It's that everything about you is extraordinary. And when you receive that kind of love, you start to feel that way about yourself. So as you journey through the other side, you learn how to love yourself in many, many ways. And that's a complete healing of the soul.
To really come to that is the love of animals.
Yes, that's pretty much where we can experience that unconditional love. Yes, I agree. But still, it's not quite as, I don't think it's as powerful on this plane as it is on the next plane.
Well, I would imagine not, since we're still in the density of everything physical in this lifetime. Whereas mm-hmm. there, of course, as you said, he's going toward light. He's encountering beings of higher dimensions and light body. So, oh my goodness. Can't wait, really.
Okay.
People get scared when I say that because they're like, "No, Patricia, you have to stay." But I do. I can't wait to experience that next passage because this lifetime is filled with many, many blessings. I love, despite all the difficulties we have, I love life, and I celebrate it. But I'm just curious. I can't wait until that next phase begins. But I have to, so anybody's listening, don't worry. This is not a message that I'm planning to check out. Even though were I to jump back in the ocean with the dolphins and they invited me again to swim away.
Mm.
Do you
swim with the dolphins?
Yeah.
Billy used to swim with the dolphins.
Well, there we go. I really, when I was with the dolphins, and the first time was the most extraordinary experience. And in that bliss, the ultimate bliss I've ever known, my mind, I heard my mind say, this is the way I'm going out.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just swim with them until I was out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been
mm-hmm.
a heck of a note for my partner.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. And it reminds me a little bit of one of the changes I've gone through since communicating with Billy is that I've become much less afraid of aging because I always saw aging as coming to the end of something, leaving behind all these things that I cherish. But actually, now I see aging as if I'm going towards this beautiful door and this exciting adventure. And it's helped me a lot in that way. So I understand how you feel, Patricia. I really do.
Yes. Somebody recently called me a grandmother. I almost had a heart attack. But the question of aging, I never really feel my age. My brain is still, I'm 20. I'm like frozen in a 20-year-old mentality, even
mm-hmm.
though I'm not there anymore. Because I think of the passion I have for life and there's a certain innocence I feel about life that is about everything being ahead of me. And I think that that includes this passing, the great passing that we all do. As I always tell everyone, there's one thing you know for sure, and that is you're going to pass out of this reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. That's probably the only thing we know for sure in this whole process. And I imagine even that someday soon will be challenged.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I mean, the evolution that happens after we die is spectacular. And I think that all the things that people do, some of the things that people do to stay here, which are painful things, maybe this book will help them let go. Because one of the things Billy says in the book is, you know, once you're not afraid of death, you have a better life. And that's
definitely
really true.
It's in my workshops, I spend the first couple of hours taking people through looking at fear. And
mm-hmm.
everyone talks about their fear. And of course, it always boils down to, no matter what it is, fear of flying, fear of rejection, fear of whatever, it always boils down to fear, the fear of not existing anymore, the fear
mm-hmm.
of not knowing, the fear of the unknown. And that is a perennial question that will that has and will forever torment humankind because of the contrast between the idea of a finite existence and the idea of an immortal soul. And it really is a very difficult thing for people who don't have any perception at all of their own immortality to think this clock is running out. I mean, I've heard people say, you know, I'm at the end. I'm 75 years old. I don't have much left to do. And I'm going, sister, you're just about to take a beautiful walk into a brand new place.
Yes. There's a point where Billy says this beautiful, it's like a chant or he says, how noble is the human being to incarnate and to forget, you know, the immortality and to believe that they're going to lose everything in the moment of death. It's such a noble journey that we take, right? Of forgetting. And I think that's part of this journey is remembering what we forgot, remembering that we are eternal, immortal, divine beings. And that's partly why we come here, for that journey of returning, that remembering.
Yes. Does he talk to you about the purpose of reincarnation? I mean, we know the obvious, the karma question or whatever, but the purpose of the physical journey. You're talking,
yeah, he says a lot of different things. One thing is he really debunks the way we think of karma. He very clearly says it's not an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, equalizing of the score, and that you're not paying back old debts. That's a kind of a human way of thinking about things, and that the divine mind or the divine source doesn't really function in that human way. And that, he puts it, that we really come here to experience. We think we're coming here for all these lessons. And it's interesting because he goes through many different kinds of life reviews in the afterlife. It's not just one life review. He goes through many, and each life review gets deeper, right, and has a different purpose. And he gets to a life review where he realizes that it's really the miracle of life itself is the main reason we incarnate, right? Not to win or lose or learn. Yes, those things too. But it's for breathing and smiling and looking into the eyes of the person we love and just being here and looking at the flowers. And that's affected my life a lot.
I really resonate with that information. I'm constantly trying to help people understand there's a new, off-earthers a growing group of people who are just ready to leave, star seeds, want to get on with it, and want to go through the ascension. And I say, you know what? You chose to be here. If you can't make this beautiful, don't think that you're going to sprout wings and fly into some light body reality and find beauty there. Because the question at hand is, you came here to experience this. Find the beauty here.
I think one of the problems is that society teaches us certain things, that we're supposed to be happy or we're supposed to have a good life, or we're supposed to be successful, rather than we're supposed to have a lot of different experiences, and all those experiences are okay. Like one of the things that Billy says is life's very temporary, so don't let time just pass. Let all the moments fill you, the ones you judge as good as well as bad. So we don't have to, you know, close ourselves when sadness comes into our life. We can open our house to all the visitors, and then life is a lot more natural and a lot more enjoyable, right?
Well, yeah, we have this range of emotion for a reason. Mm. In fact, the beings that I channel, the Syrian High Council, say how we would love to experience. You strive for this higher state of understanding, but how joyous to experience the range of human emotion.
Yes.
We want to feel it. We want to, and even Jane Roberts, a wonderful channel years ago, channeled Seth. Seth said, yes, it's wonderful here, but what I would give for another glass of Merlot.
And that's Billy's prescription for happiness. It's like, keep paying attention to all the things that you like. Our mind gets so preoccupied with our problems and the drama, and that's understandable. There are a lot of problems and there's a lot of drama. But my spiritual practice now is to pay attention to all the things that are precious to me and that give me pleasure. Because
mine too. I shall dream
too.
Oh, absolutely. I think if I could focus on one of my main messages, it is actually even in writing. Pay attention to everything around you. Celebrate it, feel the pain, feel the joy. Because so many people say, I don't want to really talk about that. You've mentioned that I'm going to talk about anything I want to talk about and to anyone who will listen. And if it upsets me, I'm going to go ahead and feel upset and resolve it because it's something that is important enough for me to think about. Then I'm going to feel it, think about it, and come up with a solution to it if I can. And that's how I live my life. And I pay attention to things that matter, and I pay attention to the most simple things. Like my partner, Franco, he's always shocked that I can identify the different bird calls outside the window in the morning.
Lovely.
He's like, "What do you mean?" I go, "Well, there's somebody new out there." And it's just because he's not listening. It's there. It doesn't take any great psychic ability. It's just listen to the bird call, for goodness sakes. It's the music of the earth. Right?
Oh yeah. Billy taught me that nature has more light than anything else on the planet. And when I was deep into grieving, you know, I just turned to the trees and the forest and the flowers and the little animals, because they're very healing. I think they're the purest form of divine on this planet.
Okay, well, I'm going to add to that idea in a minute, because I think we are also nature, so we are capable of that purity too. I just want to interrupt here because I'm going to open up the line for calls to speak with Annie. And before I do that, I want to remind you that I've got Annie Kagan with me, and her book is The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. So we're talking about her brother who's passed over, and her book talks about her experience of communication with him. If you'd like to talk to her, you'd like to ask her a question about your own experience, here's the number. Toll-free number for U.S. and Canada is 888-627-6008. Once more, 888-627-6008. We've got still 20 minutes to the show, so if you'd like to join in, please feel free to call us, and we'll get you online, and we'll get you to be able to talk to Annie directly. All right, so that done. Let's see, where were we? Annie, how long has it been now since you've been communicating with him?
Since 2005.
Oh, my!
Yeah, but the book only covers about a 2.5-year period of that time. But yes, and it's still ongoing. I could tell you a funny story that happened the other day.
Yes, we love your stories.
It was my birthday, and as I'm walking to the pharmacy, Billy says to me, and you have to understand, I'm a shy, private person. I don't like exposing who I am. I'm not really a public type person. Billy calls me Greta Garbo. He fools around with me, not when he was alive, but now he says my Greta Garbo sister. So now, of course, with the book coming out, I'm going to have more attention, right? Mm-hmm. So it's my birthday, and I'm walking towards the pharmacy, and he says to me, "I want to get you a birthday card." And as I'm walking towards the pharmacy, I see in the window by the carousel, right in the center, there's a card, and across the top of the card, in big, big pink letters, it says, "Sister." And it has butterflies all over the front, and butterflies are messengers from the other side. And it says, on the front, it says, "Live the glamour." And I go inside, and I open the card, and it says, "Let your inner celebrity out to play. Happy birthday."
Oh, so wow.
I knew that card. Now, Patricia, if you could tell me how these things happen, that card would not have made sense any other year of my life. And I just know that somehow this card came from him. But I don't know how it happens. Do you?
I'm there. Could be that their presence is ahead of you in a sense. They see the card and they use the information from what they're seeing to point you to it. Could be for some way they manifest putting it there. Certainly a force of energy dropped that card from my mother over in that moment.
Exactly.
I mean, we have a beautiful...
But that's more understandable to me, because it's like a movement thing or lights flashing. I know that people from the other side can use invisible forces like the wind. But when something manifests...
The room was closed, sealed. The window was not open. There was no possible way.
Right. There you go. There was no any other explanation, right?
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I think that perhaps, you know, I'm just, this is just conjecture. Perhaps he was standing in front of the store and I don't know, maybe he picked up the card and put it there, or maybe he saw.
No, I know, and I ask him over and over, like, how do you do these things? But he doesn't tell me, and the only conclusion I can come to is somehow the holographic nature of the universe, where everything was kind of created at the same time, and it was meant to be, I don't know, it's a deep mystery to me, how these things happen.
Well, yeah, and, you know, there's also the more complicated information that I bring through from the council that talks about simultaneous reality.
Yeah.
And how there are all these interacting planes of reality and parallel universes where we exist in many. So, you know, that is not a subject we can broach in 15 minutes. But,
no.
You know, all I know is it's just amazing. It's wonderful that we have validation of this in such vivid ways. And in your case, so such loving, celebratory moments to have him close to you. It's such a gift. What a gift.
It's such a gift. And I think that beyond that gift is, I think what they're trying to also tell us is that if we're real, if we could come, if we could give you signs, if we can visit, that means the afterlife is real, that we're all eternal and that we really do go on. And oftentimes I think to myself, wow, what does that really mean to me? I like to pose that question to people. Like, what if you really are a divine eternal being? How would that change your life today? I think that's a very nice question to contemplate.
Well, the obvious answer, if there's certainly more than one,
yes,
is that when you embrace the idea of this immortality, mm-hmm, it is by nature of that acceptance, your life becomes so much easier to live because you lose the fear of your death, your own mortality, the ending.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go, because once you embrace that, you really understand it, like in your case. In my case, I've actually been on the other side.
Near-death experience. Uh-huh.
I've just been out of my body, just popped right out.
Out-of-body experience, uh-huh.
But more than an out-of-body experience, I was out of my body, completely out, saying, okay, this is it. I thought I was dead at first. I walked around and experience the very physical part of me. I was still in form. I could still relate completely to the physical nature of that space.
Yes,
it was just like another body journey flying around. It was up and around going, okay, so now what? But I truly have no fear of death. None at all. Because I've been there. I know. And, you know, for people who have been over there,
yes,
or people like you who have the experience of someone who is,
yes,
it's the ultimate gift to be able to be fearless about that process, knowing, anticipating,
yes,
what awaits you.
Yes, and another thing that it does for me on this level, and this is something Billy goes into detail about in the book, is that the nature of life on Earth has to have a shadow element. It's almost like in my cells, I have a memory of a place where there's no shadow, where there's only light. And I realized that you can't have the sea without the storms. You can't have the wind without tornadoes. And I am able to accept the shadow element on Earth, which also makes my life so much better. I'm not always waiting for a time when I don't have obstacles.
I agree with that. Hold on a minute. We have a call.
Sure.
Okay, we've got Matt on line two. I think this is my friend Matty. Matt, are you there?
I am. Hi, Patricia. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
I have a question, and it's perhaps a little bit more difficult and maybe a little dark. Earlier in the show, Annie was saying how she believes that no one is trapped.
Yes.
I wanted to ask about suicide because that's something that happened to a friend of mine. Do you think that people can get trapped in states of confusion or suicide or...
That's a really good question. Because before you answer that, Annie, I'm glad he asked that question, because there is every belief system talks about that aspect, that, you know, suicide means you are not going to make it into the light. So what you can share with us would really be helpful.
Yes. Billy doesn't talk about suicide in particular, but from what I understand, there is no punishment or pain on the other side at all. And I think that with our human minds, we form certain things. And of course, it's good to finish out your life. The end of Billy's life was extremely painful, but he says he was really glad that he lived it out. Someone very wise who's an authority.
Don't you think, though, that... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were through. Go ahead.
No, this is really important, that someone very wise who is in this field and lost a daughter to suicide told me that he was told that people who commit suicide are in an extraordinary amount of pain in order to do something like that. And actually, when they go to the other side, it's the opposite of punishment, that they're tended to by the most loving children because they need so much healing. So, like, the divine, because on the other side, it's a completely different atmosphere than here, the divine is just a fact over there. And the divine doesn't think like we do. It's a place of healing. So according to Billy, we are not punished and we don't suffer. We're healed.
Rather than the idea of punishment, though, it may very well be that the act of suicide, I would tend to feel this way, mm-hmm. rather than you're going over there being punished for it, perhaps it's that you're going to come back in because you haven't completed that experience. Perhaps rather than going on and say Billy's in different levels of light or different areas or whatever, however he experiences that, perhaps the person who's gone through the suicide has come back and journeyed through.
I think what happens, unlike here, where we resist our experience and maybe we have to go someplace or do something that we don't want to do or don't want to go to, on the other side, each soul receives exactly what they need. So if they need to come back here, they do so. If they need to go someplace else in the afterlife to develop, they do so, and they're happy about where they go, because it's all the benevolence is clear, which is different than here. Earth is a much harsher realm.
Yes,
yes. Oh yeah. Yes.
I kind of resonate with that, because I had a friend who I was really close with in high school,
uh-huh.
and we had a big falling out, and then when I was living in Yosemite, I started having dreams about her, mm-hmm. and then one night I was out on my patio, and I had the weirdest feeling that, you know, this person I haven't seen in forever was watching me, and this person was by nature pretty... how would you say it, a very angsty person, you know, and very resistant to life and stuff. And I felt like she was watching me, but it didn't have that feeling of, you know, anger or resistance, you know. And it was this weird feeling of, like, it's okay now, you know. I didn't really feel so much like she was saying, like, I'm moving on or I'm trapped, but, like, that everything was okay now. And she sees it. Not so much that, like, you know, suicide
film. Yeah, you know,
I think it's kind of more like what?
Yes.
Yeah?
And I think that sometimes when a person has had really strong emotions when they're alive, that their soul goes on, but they can leave behind kind of like emotional thought forms. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like negative emotions could be left behind, or say if somebody died in a fire, you know, the energy of that. But that's not their soul. The soul is free, and the soul, it's not compatible. A soul does not, according to Billy, a soul does not suffer.
I know this is controversial,
you know, but I'm just saying what Billy reported. I'm not saying this as truth. Because I know it's controversial. I know this is a really controversial part of the book. But
we are at the end of the hour already, so I have to nip this in the bud, even though...
Nip!
You know, the question of trapped souls, ghosts, hauntings, of energies that are still lingering is a subject for another show. You know, these are really subjects that are... vast in their scope, and I don't think there's any one right answer, but I do think we've gotten a very interesting perspective today from Annie Kagan and her wonderful brother, and you're going to want to find out more about it by looking for the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Annie's site is www.anniekagan.com. Annie, thank you, Matt, for tuning in. Thank you, Annie, for bringing us this beautiful expose and sharing the wonderful emotion and joy that comes through your brother. I hope we'll have you back on soon.
Great. And thank you, Patricia. This was lovely.
Thank you so much. All right, everybody. You have been listening to Annie Kagan, the book Afterlife, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I think this is a book you're going to want to read. This is Patricia Corey. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside that box. By cracky, get to work. There is all so much out there right now. The information we have available to us is just over the top. And you're going to be needing to be discerning, more discerning, as the Syrian High Council says, more discerning than ever before. So hold those words to your heart. And with that, I leave you for this wonderful day. Thanks again for tuning in. Tell your friends, Beyond the Matrix, for people who think outside the box. This is Patricia Corey signing out.